my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
That we can, and so help us God, we will make America great again.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the No Gimmicks Podcast. I'm your humble host, as always, Brady Leonard. Hopefully you guys are having a terrific week. A great show for you today. I was joined by my brother, Andrew Donaldson. Always a great time talking to Andrew. And we talked a little politics, and I'm going to be honest with you, we did a whole lot of preaching, a whole lot of talking about Jesus. If that's not your thing, please still listen to the show and learn a thing or two. I think you guys will enjoy it. Before I get to Andrew, guys, if you haven't already, please follow us on Twitter at NoGimmicksPod. Please subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe. If you're an iTunes user, please take a couple seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and a good review. We'd really appreciate that. And if you like the show and want to get involved, you can support us monthly over on Patreon, patreon.com/TheNoGimmicksPodcast. All right, without further ado, the great Andrew Donaldson. All right, guys, we're here with my brother, Andrew Donaldson. Andrew, how you been, man?
Hey, buddy. I always enjoy talking to you.
What's new, my friend?
It's funny. The more and more we study the news cycle, you just really get into these loops of this is just the same stuff over and over again, like just variations on it. So I'd love to say, oh, there's all this new stuff. In personal life, there's new stuff. But like what we do where we talk about this stuff, man, it's like the same 4 or 5 topics over and over again. The names change, the places change, just some of the nomenclature change. We really talk about the same 4 or 5 stories over and over and over again, don't we? It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is.
It's just the way it is. It's fun. Because why? Because they're all people stories and people don't really change. There's nothing new under the sun.
No. People don't change. People don't change. And just to let the audience in behind the curtain a little bit, without giving any specifics, me and Andrew just talked about our personal lives for the last hour or so. And
trust me,
it's a lot more interesting than what we're going to talk about on the show. But unfortunately for y'all, you don't get the real deal behind the scenes. You know, you gotta get to know us a little better first.
Well, that's the people are always like, how can you possibly get along with this person because they're on the right or they're on the left? Well, I was like, honestly, because almost all these people, like, we never talk about politics. We're always talking hunting or fishing, or we just talked about 90s contemporary Christian music for 45 minutes, yeah. Which, I mean, that podcast ain't doing any numbers, but I'd do a podcast on that because that's kind of the environment we grew up in. But like, I'm always talking about food or something. We never talk about politics. It's like, I guess we got to talk about this stuff now. But that's healthy, man. That's way healthy. I don't, you know, the reporters I follow, the writers, a lot of those folks, I don't talk to them about. It's people that can still talk about food or talk about sports or talk about, like, you got to be a normal person too. Otherwise, it starts reflecting in your work. And we see way too many of those folks in media right now. And you can tell. You can tell, like, no, they're just all laid up on this all the time and don't have any perspective outside. I don't want to do that. So, yeah, we talk, you know, fishing and weather and, you know, why Toledo was built on a swamp and fun stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like when somebody who's involved.
Bud Hens was literal.
Yeah. The old coot. The old coot's the technical nerd team. But man, when you're talking to somebody who's politically involved or works in politics and they use the same kind of, even if they're not like overtly political all the time, when they start using the same kind of like language and cadence and buzzwords that they do in their like political, you're just like, ugh, stop. It's like, ugh, stop. I can't, like, my eyes roll in the back of my head. Like, I just can't, I just have to get away from that conversation as fast as possible. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine looking at your wife and your 1-year-old kid and using the word woke in a sentence?
No.
I was talking to one of the young people I was mentoring the other day. I was like, start thinking some of the nomenclature you're putting in your writing
and think about if
you ever actually use it in your normal everyday conversation. And if you don't, maybe you shouldn't use it online. Because that's become a thing with me the last few years. Like, I don't want to, I try to not do buzzwords. I try not to do nomenclature that's just hot button stuff. But that's a good rule of thumb. It's like, you know, I've got, you know, teenage daughters. Have I ever used this in a phrase? No. I write about Taylor Swift because I talk about Taylor Swift because my kid's a big Taylor Swift fan. I don't use any of those big words. These, you know, I'm talking about the grifter set now. Not like people that are trying, people that are actually trying to cover stuff. Or I've got all kinds of people I don't agree with, but I'll hear their side out on, you know, this foreign policy issue or this, or we're debating Medicare or whatever. Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people that just buzzword it.
yeah,
and don't want to hear anything other than the buzzword because it hits just something certain. So
yeah, it's just like it's
those folks wear me out, and I've really pruned a lot of that from my social media and my personal life and my professional life because, like, I don't have bandwidth for that, man.
Yeah, man.
I just don't.
It's just like commentary for the lowest common denominator. That's what I feel it is, you know. It's like a hack songwriter that, you know, it's like Imagine Dragons, but for politics. Or Nickelback or something like that.
Hey, they got more money than us. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
They got one or two good songs. They're not terrible, but they fell in that. See, here you are to the stuff. They fell into what happened to, we were talking about offline. It's like you write that big hit song. It's like, okay, I got to do another one of those. And then it turns into karaoke instead of songwriting.
You're chasing the thing that worked for you when you were 22, you know. Doesn't work in your 30s or 40s. I mean, I'll tell you, the political discourse is generally on Twitter, where you and I spend way too much time, is, I mean, it's always been bad, obviously, but it's for a lot of reasons, but it's been so much worse lately. I mean, we've done two straight weeks of the internet hacks grifting off of the name of Christ. Not a fan of that. And we're going to get to that in a minute. And then yesterday, I mean, like, just the stuff that political types choose to spend, the topics that these people choose to spend their time on. I mean, Twitter spent all day yesterday relitigating World War II. World War II.
Yeah.
Because that's helpful. That's like, what are we doing, man? Like, I'd opt out of all these Twitter debates. I can't handle the stupidity. And it's like, I mean, my gosh, like, I just don't, you know, a couple months ago, libertarian spent a week debating Abraham Lincoln. And it's like, regardless of what you think about Lincoln, don't we have bigger fish to fry right now than debating whether or not we're justified in Truman dropping the bombs? Like, how is this helpful?
It's time and place is a universal principle that works great here. Like, if I'm in an academic classroom taking a class, I'd love to discuss how Lincoln, you know, trampled habeas corpus for 4 years and broke all kinds of laws and whatever. But, and then you have the debate is like, well, yeah, but, you know, he also held the country together, and we have a country because he did those things. And you have that debate in an academic setting or that kind of a setting. I'm not having that conversation on Twitter because, good Lord, I made a remark on the radio the other day, and a lot of people got mad at it. I was doing my buddy's radio show down in Myrtle Beach. I was like, the absolute dumbest thing you can do is ask for parenting advice on social media.
Oh, gosh.
If you want to get the weirdest, most crank, wackadoo, conspiracy, nut job people, go on Facebook and say, hey, give me parenting advice about my child, because my God, the tsunami of stupid you are about to receive is immense. Like, Godzilla would duck out of that. Like, it's so bad. But it's a time and a place thing. Like, I don't, you know, I've studied theology for over 20 years. I love it. I'm looking at my double bookshelf over here, just full of this stuff. Like, I just do it for fun. I've done it academically. I never talk theology on Twitter ever. Very, very rare.
Because what are you going to gain? What is to be gained?
Well, who's your audience for it? Like, is those people that have
psychopaths?
And I'm not even talking about
unstable people. Yeah.
You don't have to have a degree in it, but it's like, okay, is it somebody that's genuinely curious, asking a question because they want to learn something, or they at least want to I don't have to agree with you, but I want to understand why you believe what you want, like that kind of stuff when it comes to policy. And you just don't get that on Twitter and social media. I don't even have Facebook because people are like, don't you love your family? I'm like, I love my family. That's why I don't have a Facebook. You know, in love with those people. But it's just so bad. What do you do? There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Well, you wrote a great piece on your Substack, and I tweeted it out, but I'll retweet it again once the show's up, talking about Donald Trump pimping out the Christian faith over the last week or so. Also, just side note here, the number of people who are still in the year of our Lord 2024 pretending to like God Bless the USA and Lee Greenwood generally, just because Trump, the 80-year-old man, does, is remarkable. It's obviously one of the worst songs ever written. It's up there with anything 21 Pilots or Imagine Dragons has ever written in terms of just being a trash song.
You are really on this Imagine Dragon thing today.
It's the worst music written probably since like the turn of the millennia.
I mean, it's not Cars for Kids. It's not like offensive.
Well, but they're probably the worst like famous act probably.
Everybody's got the one that they just can't stand.
It's random. They don't even write lyrics. It's just random rhyming syllables.
Hey, that's how you make money songwriting. I mean,
I'm not trying to make that kind of money.
Nashville Writer Room, those six guys have been they live pretty good out of some of that stuff.
They do. They do. I know some of them too. I
know. You ever watch pro wrestling? The woes get to all the big pops in the songs. You know.
Never. I've never watched pro wrestling in my life.
You know, they do the big entrances. It's they don't they sing the lyrics, but they do the woes and the wows and all that. You know, that's what people pop for.
But anyway, Lee Greenwood aside, worst song of all time aside.
There's literally a Canadian version where he just changed like six words to Canada and sold it, and everybody's still like, "This is the great." No, I put it in the piece because I'm a little bit older than you. I hated it in the 90s. I hated it during the Gulf War, is kind of where I really remember it really just getting slammed down. It, like all of a sudden it was opening when. See, I'm old enough. I remember when TV turned off at night and it came back on in the morning. Like they would do the national anthem, but there for a while during the Gulf War, they were like opening every show on TV with that stupid song. I hated it then. I hated it when I went to basic training and Staff Sergeant Perez made a stand up for, which I'm still mad about that here now 25 years later. I hated it during 9/11 because now it's like, oh God, now we got to do this for another 10 years. And then Trump latched onto it and did it. It's terrible. I hate that song.
It's terrible.
And it's the same thing because it's just, you know, I did the line about it and everybody got a kick out of it, but I was like, you know, it's just shooting the ready whip patriotic sugar high right into your mouth straight out of the fridge. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I don't like it. And the fact it's the patriotic song for people. I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, send your emails. It's the patriotic song for people who really haven't thought about their patriotism very much.
Yeah.
And what it actually means.
Yeah.
Like it feels good. Fine. I get some people just like songs because it's a feel good song and it's got the right words on it. But it's like, man, I just can't stand that song. And now it's ate at me for 20 years. And I probably shouldn't be bitter about it, but I've listened to it for so long. This is like the third or fourth wave of this song I've dealt with.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's the same thing. We have a multi-generational problem with this stupid song. It blows my mind.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of how Fortunate Son was in every movie about the Vietnam War as like an anti-war song. It just became
pro-war
song.
You cannot hear that
song.
Riff without hearing a helicopter.
I know. Yeah.
You can't. You hear a Huey helicopter when you hear that riff if you're a certain age. You just do. It's that ingrained into the culture. But I don't. I mean, at least Fogerty could write a lick. But
he could at least sing, you know. Goodness gracious.
Creedence was extremely talented where they did their riffs and stuff as a piece. But this thing with the God Bless, at some point, even if something wasn't bad on its own, the people that are using it and why they are using it just makes it untouchable to me. And that song did it about two wars ago before we even got into the politics of it. I just don't want I don't want anything to do with the song, but people who think that that's like the pinnacle of patriotism, it just kind of bothers me. It's because I feel bad for them. Like, so you really don't understand a deep patriotic love for your country, because this would bother you if you did. And you have this like shallow understanding of, yes, our country's great, flawed, but great. And it's done great things and it can do great things again because it's full of great people. But you're never going to be great if that's your standard, this sugary pop, you know, canned patriotism that's just based off of buzzwords because a guy needed a hit song. Sorry.
And I mean, you're absolutely right that these people, it's a song for people that haven't thought through their patriotism. And like, it's not that I'm not patriotic. I love this country. I know people maybe sometimes think I don't because I'm such a radical and stuff, but I do. I love this place. Hate the government, but I love my country and my countrymen. But I love the Lord a lot more than I love this country, and I take my faith a lot more seriously than I take my patriotism, and we have to talk about that briefly, because I'll be honest, man, this shit is sickening. Like, I don't get offended by what politicians do or say, you know? And I'm fine with voting for the lesser of two evils. I think most politicians are evil, nefarious forces in this world. Even the few that I like, I think are still wicked at some level, you know? If you're attracted to a job like that, where you get to wield this immense level of power over your neighbors, you know, I think that it attracts a lot of really sick people. But it's like, I cannot, and I give politicians a hard time for that stuff all the time, but like, I'll never turn a blind eye to politicians pimping Christianity, man. It's like your faith should absolutely shape every aspect of your worldview. It certainly shapes mine. I know it does for you as well. And I'm not saying your faith shouldn't impact who you vote for. I think it should. But, like, it's like, brother, if you think a politician or a political movement or a country at all, any nation, anyone is going to establish Christ's kingdom here on earth, then, brother, you ain't talking about Christian doctrine anymore. You're talking about the other kind of doctrine, false doctrine, evil doctrine.
No.
You know, like, if these people, you know, Trump and these people going along with it, man, you know, between the selling Bibles for $60, an autographed Bible, to Trump's comment the other night, I think he was in Wisconsin or Michigan or one of the swing states, where he said, you know, election day is Christian visibility day and all that. And it's like, look, man, if these people are actually Christians, they ought to be careful. They ought to be real careful with this stuff, because God will not be mocked. And it is just a fundamental misunderstanding of how God works and what God values in us, in our country. It is just, it's sick, man. It's sick. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase it because I can't remember the exact quote, but there was an old line from Elmer Towns, who was a teacher I had theology for years, a friend of my dad's, who I'd met him a few times, but he had the great line about it. He's like, faith is the stuff that you do. Religion is the thing you try to get something out of.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's what this is. And like, I put it in the piece when I was writing, you know, if I just automatically react like a Pavlovian dog to the bell every time somebody puts the words God, America, Jesus Christ, faith, church, Christianity, what if you just have this automatic reaction to a social media post just because that terminology is on there, what's that say about my faith? What does it say if I completely lose my bearing and I completely just go into outrage mode every time somebody says anything with those specific set of words in the tweet, pro, for, against, whatever? And the fact that it's so obvious, because, you know, you and me have been doing this a while. There's an integrated media on the left, and there's an integrated media. Thank you, Miss Brown, that taught me English. Integrated media on the right. You can just, like, all the accounts just all of a sudden start posting the same thing over and over and over again. Like, it's obvious if you just take a second to look at it.
Yeah.
And, man, nothing hits those buttons like faith and religion and Christianity. But they figured it out, that these engagement farmers, they figured it out. But what does that say about my faith if I just go flying off the handle just because I see a tweet with, like, oh, and then, you know, my replies fill up like, you don't love God, you don't love America. I'm like, why? Because I didn't get outraged over a tweet? Like, we stop and think of what you're saying. That's insane. That's crazy. Why would I lose my bearing over a tweet that's designed to make me angry? Like, you're just falling into a trap. And even if it's for something good or bad or indifferent, if you're just going to fall in a trap all the time, then you didn't really work out that faith part very good. You didn't think it through. You didn't take it seriously enough to learn a little bit of discernment just to protect yourself and your own heart. I find it sad, but and I'm watching it, like, it's a dwindling number. Like, it's, you know, you can only go to the medicine so long, and then it starts losing its effect, right?
Yeah.
And we're starting to see that now. People like hawking a Bible. That's kind of, I'm talking hardcore people with Trump stickers on their cars are like, okay, that's cringy. I don't like that. Like, eventually it just starts wearing off, and it becomes really, really apparent what it is. And then this Christian Day of Visibility, which, by the way, for those of you from Logan that didn't catch the reference, November 5th is Election Day this year. So just, I know some of you might have missed that. I love you, Logan. I'm picking on you. You know, that kind of, it's like, okay, well, because the next thing out of that's going to be like the line the other day. It's like, well, you know, you're not really a Jew unless you vote for me. You're not really a Christian unless you vote for me. You're not really an American unless you vote. That's how all that stuff starts. So anytime they hear something like that, just remember the opposite. She's like, well, if you didn't completely agree with them, would they still be saying this? You know, there's your litmus test real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it bothers me a heck of a lot more than all that other stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, Joe Biden said, you know, the last election, you're not it's black Americans. You're not black unless you vote for me and all that. And like politicians are all like this. Like, I understand.
Romney's going to put you in chains. That was a good one.
Right. Yeah. Going to put you all back in chains. Yeah. But like, it's just, the thing is that God is real. Like that's the difference. The thing is that Jesus is the Son of God. So it's just different. Like, I don't care when politicians lie to me. I know they're all liars. I don't take anything any of these monsters say seriously. I don't take anything they say seriously. I mean, the last good man in Washington probably died 100 years ago. It's over, okay? Like, it's just, I don't care, and that doesn't bother me. That's why Trump doesn't bother me usually. Biden doesn't usually bother me. It's all that, but it's like, when you try to, like, the thing that bothered me the most about the Bibles thing is that they put, other than the Lee Greenwood song, that bothered me a lot too. But the other part that bothered me is that they put the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and then the Pledge of Allegiance, which is ridiculous, written by literal communists. But so they put all those documents in the Bible.
Not to interrupt you, but y'all need to go Google search the salute you were supposed to do for the Pledge of Allegiance back in the 30s when he first came up with that. Just go Google search it and look what that salute looked like. You're going to change your opinion on the Pledge of Allegiance real fast.
I'm going to do that right now.
Okay, this will be fun. This makes for terrible audio, but the reaction is going to be fantastic.
Oh, man. Is it as bad as I think it's going to be?
It's exactly what you think it's going to look like.
Okay.
And this stuff was all litigated. The whole point, the guy that came up with it was just a lunatic.
Yeah.
But go look at what the original salute for the pledge. While you said the Pledge of Allegiance, you didn't put your hand over your heart. You did something else.
Oh, no. Oh,
now. Now, to be fair, this changed a few years later when this little Austrian fellow over in Germany started using that salute for stuff.
Yeah.
But that was the original. You stood and did that for the Pledge of Allegiance. That's how it was designed to be said.
Well,
you
yikes.
Can find photos of it. And what we're talking about is, you know, the straight arm salute.
Which, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, now, you know, Nazi Germany forever ruined, but had been around for, you know, thousands of years before that. That was the original thing. The Pledge of Allegiance. You know, Bellamy, it was called the Bellamy salute until Hitler got a hold of it. That was actually called the Bellamy salute, that straight arm salute. And for obvious reasons, that went away really quick. But, you know, this stuff, in fact, the Supreme Court case over the Pledge of Allegiance in school is involved West Virginia. So I just, you know, we've written about it, Ordinary-Times, my friend M. Carpenter's hashed this out, is like, if you're making somebody say something, you've already lost, you're a libertarian. I mean, this is in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
If you're making somebody say something, you've already lost the point of having it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm fine with the Pledge of Allegiance. I said the Pledge of Allegiance. I know it. I'm fine with it. But no, you don't make a kid stand and say it if they don't want to, because that's beside the point. You can teach it. You know, it's a principle. You can say things. But those are the sorts of things, like, you know, I bet most people probably don't know a thing about Francis Bellamy, the wackadoo that he was. You know, the guy that came up with the Pledge of Allegiance. They just don't understand those things. They don't think about them things because it's just been ingrained. Like, oh, flag, I love the flag. This is all awesome. And they don't think any further than that.
Yeah. He was a socialist, and he was a big fan of, like, Mussolini, right? Like, the Italian fascists, I believe, at the time.
There's been a lot of stuff since then. You know, so, and it's gotten kind of beat up in over the years, and the Bellamy Pledge, you know, it was actually called the Bellamy Pledge allegedly. It was the original one was actually, we give our hearts to God and country, one language, one flag. Now, imagine how problematic that would be now against. But Bellamy's an interesting dude for people to just listen. He was a Baptist when he was younger. And then he started getting into some, you know, crazier stuff as he got older and older and over. But he started out as a Baptist and became a Christian socialist, which for the late 1800s, early 1900s, remember what you're dealing with. You're in the Gilded Age, they called it. There's a lot of dispersion between the rich and the poor. It was not unusual to have Christian socialists. It didn't have a stigma now. But yeah, he was a socialist, and he was trying to do stuff with, like, immigration, universal suffrage, the stuff of his day. And he came up with the Pledge of Allegiance, and he's an interesting guy to read. He's not a bad guy or a good guy, I don't think. He's just one of those really complex guys, and he had bad ideas and a couple of good ideas, but he's a perfect example of people don't know who Francis Bellamy is anymore, but everybody knows who the Pledge of Allegiance is.
Yeah.
And part of understanding, should you make somebody stand and recite this, maybe you should review the life of the guy that did it. We don't want to take those. This goes to that social media thing we opened up with. People don't want to take those extra, you know, 3 minutes on Google. You could have learned everything we just talked about in the last 5 minutes. Like, it takes you a couple minutes to learn all that. And people don't want to take the couple minutes. They just want to react to, oh, of course everybody should be made to say the Pledge of Allegiance. And no, you don't really believe that if you talk through it for a few minutes. But we live in that clickbait, click it right now society. So you don't listen about, you know, Bellamy or the Bellamy Salute or all the stuff we just talked about. Just take a couple extra minutes and look stuff up before you get all outraged.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, the old count to 10 stuff, maybe you should have to do at least like 4 or 5 Google searches on something before you get outraged. Maybe that's the new rule.
Yeah. But what I was going to mention is they in the Trump Bible scam thing, they included all the founding documents and the Pledge of Allegiance in the Bible that they're selling. And it's just like, it just reminded me of who's the feller in the Old Testament who David had bring the Ark of the Covenant. God, he accidentally touched it. God struck him down.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Start with a U.
He kind of got a raw deal there, but
it's not your right. Yeah, it wasn't really his fault. But the point is, it's like you just don't mix the human and the sacred. You don't mix that. Like you just don't, and you don't mix your patriotism with your faith because one ought to be a heck of a lot more important than the other. Not that love of country isn't important or patriotism isn't important, but it's not even in the same stratosphere. I mean, this country, as great as it is, and I think it's the greatest country in the history of the world, this place is going to burn, brother. This place is not going to last forever.
Yeah.
Whether that means it's all over when Christ comes back, or, I mean, equally as likely, the United States is gone long before Christ comes back, but empires have an expiration date, and so does this one. And this is not, like, there's no America in heaven, man. Like, people, like, do you understand the gravity of eternity? Like, there's no real way, like, you can't, like, one of the words in English that's impossible to explain is the word eternity, right? Because there's no way to, like, for the human brain to really comprehend what that means. It doesn't just mean big.
No.
It means bigger than, beyond all human comprehension.
Yeah.
Like you're
linear beings can't get their head around that.
You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's just like, so if you don't make the mistake of thinking that the Constitution is somehow on the same level as the Word of God, I'm a big fan of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, but trust me, nobody's going to remember those boys. Like when every word those men have ever spoken or written are gone and long forgotten, the Word of God will stand. And to see Christians either ignore that, not understand that fundamental difference at face value, or just not care. It's like, man, it's wrong, man. It's wrong. And I'm going to get to the left too, because like a lot of it's their fault, because a lot of it's just reactionary. But like, look, if you're on the right, anybody, if you call yourself a Christian, you just have to understand God. It's not that God doesn't care about this country. God, you know, he does, but it's not the same, man. Like, this country, everything you see will burn. Everything you see in this nation has an expiration date. The Bible does not. The Word of God, Jesus was there from the beginning, the agent of creation. All things were created through him, okay? That will stand for all of eternity, and eternity is a big word with a real meaning. And to see people, to see Trump and these hacks, these charlatans and grifters lump in American politics, the Constitution, the Declaration, all of that, with the Word of God, makes me sick. Like, that is just, it's indefensible, it's inexcusable, there's nothing. And, like, I see so many people who I know are Christians, who are big Trump fans, some of them are working for the campaign, or being paid to be, you know, whatever, or not, they're just big Trump fans, and they just shut the fuck up for a week. They didn't say a damn thing, Andrew.
No.
They didn't say a thing.
What
would they have
Vivek
said if Joe Biden did the same thing? If Joe Biden did that?
I really enjoyed Vivek telling me Happy National Christian Appreciation Day. I really appreciated and enjoyed that. There's something really bigger here, and you're all over it, but just to kind of laser focus on it real fast, one of the real tells throughout all of human history is the only reason you try to make something that's clearly secular sacred is for power.
Yeah.
It's a universal thing all through history. I hate it. This is one of my big things. I hate when we talk about legislation. Well, it's enshrined in law. We were always trying to make it sound more important than it really is, and we're always trying to add this religious content. Like, we're going to enshrine this law. We're going to make sure it's No. It's just a law. We're going to work. Anytime you start trying to make something secular, super spiritual, it's always for power. So that's why I call, you know, my Twitter's been burning up all morning, because that speech of him talking about Christian Appreciation Day being, you know, November 5th, Election Day, I'm like, this is faith pimping. This is exactly what this is, what he's doing. He doesn't, I've got 70 years of book on Donald Trump, how he lives his life. Now, his relationship with his God is his business. That's between him and God. And I don't judge that particularly. All I have to do is to go off the actions of the man. I don't see the actions of anybody that takes faith seriously until 2015 when he showed up and all of a sudden knew he needed this specific block of voters. Now, whatever his faith is, fine. God bless. I don't care. That's between him and God. But don't tell me that this person cares about our faith, because I can just listen to the buzzwords. He talks about our religion. You and I come from similar faith backgrounds, right? We were joking about 90s contemporary Christian music, good, bad, or indifferent. That was an era, right? What was the biggest word you never, ever used in the late 90s in contemporary Christian music and in just in Christianity in general? Like, what was the last word you ever uttered? Religion. You never would use the R word.
Yeah.
And now you see those same people who used, because you never said religion was a bad word when we were growing up. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, you hear whole sermons about it. We're not a religion. We're a faith. Mm-hmm. We're not a religion. We live what we believe. That's kind of a core tenet of Christianity, at least as we understand it and in our faith model. Trump's all, it's our religion. I was like, wait a minute. These are the same people that for 20, 30 years have told me religion's bad. And then Trump says religion because he doesn't know the actual terminology to use. And all of a sudden, it's fine. Like, there's all kinds of tells in here. It's somebody using it for power. Somebody telling me what I want to hear just for them to get power is always more dangerous in my mind than somebody telling me something I disagree with wanting to get power, because at least they're being a little honest about it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so on top of you being power hungry, now I know you're trying to shine me on top of it.
Yeah.
They're just, look at history. This is what works. It inflames people. It stirs people up. It's outrage, outrage, outrage. Jesus and God thinks it's okay for me to not act the idiot on the line in his name because of a post that uses his name in some other way. Just keep your bearing. There's all sorts of Bible verses about, you know, control yourself. Keep your, you know, the fool goes flying off the handle. Like, there's a whole book called Proverbs. It's all about controlling your temper, basically.
Yeah.
Like, the whole book is just like, control yourself. Boiled down to a couple words, it's control yourself. Calm down. You know, you're not in, the world does not revolve around you. It's going to be okay, but you need to do these couple things, but calm down. Yeah. Just keep your bearing. But these people that want to make the secular spiritual for their own power, they always inflame. It's just one of those tells. They always want you angry. Why do they want you perpetually angry? Because you're not thinking. Why do they need you perpetually upset? Because you'll send them more money when you're upset. You'll pay more attention. You click it more. This is why we talk about the thing, like, we don't talk about politics all the time. You got to turn that stuff off and, like, oh, wait a minute. I'm a Christian and American. I'm pretty much the most protected religious class that's ever walked the face of the earth. Really? Like, we're not being persecuted. That doesn't mean we shouldn't fight for our rights. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have opinions and have influence. But, like, no group of religious people in the history of mankind has prospered like the American Christians, especially post-World War II. That's just idiotic. Just stop and think. Like, stop for a second. Just stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Think what you're saying to yourself. And
I mean, do you know how many Christians have been martyred this year across the world?
The fastest.
Look at Nigeria. Tens of thousands in Nigeria alone.
The Christian faith is growing the fastest in China and Central Africa. Those are the two places it's growing the fastest. That's also where it's under severe persecution.
Yeah.
Not Trump persecution.
Yeah.
Not fake. Somebody said a mean word to me because I have a sticker on my $80,000 truck. Persecution. Not that kind of stupid crap. I'm talking about, like, you know, the underground church always does. The Christian church does best when it's underground. That's just fact.
Yeah.
You know, we're fat, dumb, and happy. The Christian church is, you know, just fat, dumb, and happy and lethargic right now. That's just the truth. Sorry, it's in the Bible, by the way. You can look all this up. You know, Corinthians is all about this.
It's like, human nature. You know, it's human nature, too.
You know, go read Corinthians. It's all about, hey, y'all got fat, dumb, and happy, and now you got really bad, stupid, sloppy doctrine because you got fat, dumb, and happy. You need to trim it down.
Yeah.
You need to get back to base. That's what most of that was, is like, you're too comfortable. Anytime somebody wants to use your faith to control you, it's not of your faith.
Yeah.
It's just not, because faith isn't about controlling you. It's about your personal growth and your relationship with your, and that's universal, by the way. Like, you know, I've talked about this with my Jewish friends, Muslim folks, Buddhists, whatever. Working out your faith, that's faith. Going along for the ride to try to get something from somewhere, that's religion. And I'm pretty much fully against religion in all forms. I will defend your faith, whatever that is, but work that out. Work your faith out. Show it in your life. I don't see that in Trump, and I don't believe him.
Well, I mean, work it out with what? Work it out with what? With fear and trembling.
Yeah, some humility maybe. That's in there too. Like, you know, the whole point, we just did Easter, the whole point of a suffering Savior, like humility. Like, come on. Like, there's just so much wrong with cultural Christianity, the business model.
Yes.
I mean, I could get deep in this because I've...
No,
I've
been, I know.
I'm literally about ready to go back and take theology classes at college just so I can argue with some of these people because I'm not even joking, and I'm not trying to be arrogant about it, but I'm like, the crap they are teaching people at Christian University, like, I literally just want to be in the discussion groups so I can just pick fights, because they need those fights need to be had. And I think it would be more, I was like, instead of sending it on Twitter, I think I'm going to go back and take some theology classes so I can sit in those groups and those people who are going to be pastors and leaders and whatever. At least one person's going to tell them something. I'm literally thinking about doing this because I've just had enough of it.
I understand why people do this. Like, I mean, if you go back to the times of Jesus, all his followers thought he was there to overthrow the Roman government. You know, because it's just, it's human nature. It's like, you think that your circumstances in your country, your political realities are the most important thing in the world. And back then they were a lot more important than we were now, because governments back then killed a lot more people than they do now. You know, it was a lot more brutal of a world 2,000 years ago than it is now. I mean, it's still a brutal world.
And most
of
them lived to see Titus level Jerusalem in 70 AD. Yes. Like, they, yes. Like, look how that worked out.
But, like, so they're constantly wondering when Jesus would declare himself king and free them from the Romans and this and that. And Jesus is like, I'm here for something way bigger than that. I'm not here to defeat Rome. I'm here to defeat death itself. And that's who Jesus is. So if, like... If you think, if you just want Jesus to transform American culture, you're missing out on everything. You're missing
that's
the point.
That's a small God, man.
That's a small
that's a really
God.
Small God.
That's a small God, and that's a small God. G God, because that's not the God that I know.
Nope.
And you're missing out on everything. You're missing out on the point of life itself if you sell the Son of God short like that. And I urge you, fellow Christians, not to do that. That's a dangerous place to be. That's a dangerous place to live. And, like, I understand, and I'd be remiss if I didn't call out the left, too, because the left knows exactly, not Joe Biden. The man, he's not with us. He doesn't know what the heck's going on. But the Biden administration, they know exactly what they're doing. They're thumbing their noses at Christians. They're thumbing their noses at Republicans. This is what they always do. They just arrested a bunch of Christians for praying outside of an abortion mill in Tennessee or somewhere. I think it was Tennessee. You know, the trans day of visibility thing. Yeah, it's been around since 2009. But any normal administration, if that fell on the same day as the holiest day in the Christian calendar, maybe they would have shelved the acute mental illness awareness day for 1 year. But they didn't, because they know what they're doing. These, you know, the White House is staffed by a bunch of radical 30-year-olds, and we understand. So I understand that the median Trump voter, these people on the right, are reacting to the left. They're reacting to the Biden administration and this and that. But going back to what I just said, who cares, man? Like, if you were talking about God, if you were talking about Jesus Christ, you're talking about something much, much bigger than this. Way bigger than Donald Trump or elections or America or Earth or anything. Okay? It is just, don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not letting Biden off the hook. But I'm not letting you people off the hook either, because you are missing the point of your faith if you do truly believe in what you say you believe in. You're missing the point. You're selling God short. It doesn't matter how bad the left is. It doesn't matter how bad Joe Biden. Yeah, I get it. Joe Biden's a bad guy. That's what I'm talking about. This, you don't react like this. You don't react by selling autographed Trump Bibles and saying you're not a Christian if you vote Democrat. I know a lot of Christians who vote Democrat. Wish they didn't. I don't want anybody. I want everybody to be a Christian, and I don't want anybody to vote Democrat. Okay? That would be fantastic. But unfortunately, that's not the world we live in. So it's just like, stay focused. If you are a Christian, if you're a follower of Christ, focus. Focus on the point of what Jesus came here to do. It was not to save America. Nobody can save America. Think America can be saved? Countries can't be saved. Countries have a shelf life. Look at England. The empire never set on the British Empire. Look at them. They're not even allowed to carry knives, Andrew. The sun has set on our brothers. Like, it just happens. It happens. It comes and goes. But the word of God doesn't. And it would be you would be wise to remember that.
It's you go out in the woods and you see the big bear trap laying there, which this is a real rural reference, but you know, the old school from the Westerns with the big claws and the big thing in the middle. It's like, oh, there's a big trap right there. Oh, that thing's going to really hurt me. Oh, I shouldn't put my leg in here, but I'm going to step on it anyway real hard. Oh no, I just lost my foot. Like, okay. Yeah, it was a trap set there, but there was like five steps that you consciously went through to make sure you still stuck your foot in it.
Yes.
And that's what I was trying to tell people about the trans day. It's like, yeah, it's been the same day for 15 years. Yes, some 26-year-old staffer at the White House really got a giggle out of the fact that the dates just happened to line. By the way, our Easter celebration is based off the lunar calendar, so don't get too high up on that high horse. Guys, just
I liked all the tweets. I liked all the tweets that trans day of visibility isn't for another month for the Orthodox Christians. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, but somebody else says, like, what is that on the Chinese lunar calendar? Do we have to do that again in February or what? Like, don't get wrapped up on this. Yeah, some snicky staffer probably got a big kick out of that. But it's like, why do you want to acknowledge their existence in the first place? It's like, just leave it alone. They want to celebrate it, leave them alone. Why does that affect and bother you? And especially online, we just talked about it. It's like, once the integrated online grifting right gets a hold of something, you really need to just step off it. Because anything good has the old thing about nothing happens good in a bar after midnight. Nothing good happens after about the second or third tweet
on any like, given day.
Once you've done one or two tweets, it's time to just go to something else because nothing good's going to happen after that.
Yeah.
If 100 outlets are all doing the exact same, they did this with the national anthem Monday night with the girls basketball game. I can't believe they didn't come out for and then the coach they asked the coach and she's just like we're never on the court during the national anthem. I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, but it was the same people again. It's like, guys, this is like my sixth national anthem controversy. I'm just numb to it. I don't care anymore. It's like, why is this bothering you? Well, it's not bothering you. It's the engagement farmers really need to click. Stop walking into the trap.
Yeah.
Like, if these six outlets are all telling you the same thing, do you need to follow all six of them anymore?
Yeah.
Really? Do you? You don't. Weed that out. Go find something else to talk about. Stop stepping into traps that people are grabbing you emotionally about stuff that really ain't going to matter in a year or 2 years or 5 years. Revolver theory of life. You got six bullets. You really want to use one of them on this.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
I find it frustrating and it's bad for your bandwidth and it's bad for the country. And it's bad. We complain about the media. The media is going to keep feeding us this stuff because you keep reacting to it. You choose your own media now. Everybody understands that, right? The algorithms, even the network TV, you choose your own. They've had Nielsen ratings forever. If the ratings are good for it, they're going to keep doing it. If the clicks are good for it, they're going to keep doing it. You keep clicking on this stuff. You can click on it to tell them you hate it. I just tells them to keep feeding it to you because you clicking on it, hating it, clicking on it, liking it, that's the same amount of money for them. We control our own media. We get what we deserve. Let's maybe start trimming some of this stuff out.
Yeah. Before I let you go, because we've been talking about faith so much, it's been interesting to me. I don't have a point here or even an opinion, really, but it's been interesting. You know, a lot of people across the, mostly on the right, you know, non-Christians on the right, either atheists or people of other faiths. And then, you know, Christopher Hitchens even came out and said something similar, how like society in the West was better when there was more, you know, the churches had more power and there was more people were believers in God. And we need to get back to, you know, a cultural Christianity is better for society and this and that. And it's just like, obviously I know where they're coming from. I mean, they see the, you know, sorry to sound cheesy in 90s Christianese, but they see the God-shaped hole in society, right? They see that people are not fulfilled. People are killing themselves. People are turning themselves trans to try to find themselves and this and that and all that. And they see the decline in faith in society as the problem, which is true. I mean, that is a problem. But it's funny that it's really funny to hear non-believers come to this conclusion like the answer is cultural secular Christianity, because there's Bible verses about that too. You know, having a form of godliness but denying its power, right? I mean, there's Bible verses about that too. So it's like, you know, I get it, and like these people are coming from the right place, I think, in saying like, hey, we want people to flourish. Christianity helps that happen on a societal level. But it's just like, but still, you're still missing the point of Christ, that he came on earth to save sinners, of whom I am chief. You know, that's the point. And so it's like, people, you know, you see in like Jordan Peterson and people like that have been kind of saying this whole thing where like, I don't believe in God, but I want that, you know, I see the value in Christianity. So it's like, it's funny seeing how pervasive that is. And it, like, it's good and bad. I'm not even saying that's technically all a bad thing, but it's just interesting to me. It's interesting that so many people are coming to that conclusion, but also still missing the point of Scripture itself.
Yeah, everybody wants the post-World War II idealistic economic boom that just happened to be in a predominantly Christian nation, and they forget that we had this thing called the Dark Ages that was also predominantly Christian-controlled that didn't go very well.
Right.
You know, economics have probably more to do with a lot of the American Christian thing than we want to admit. We've been very prosperous here.
Yeah.
I meant what I said, you know, the Christian faith has never been more successful culturally. Christianity is a multi-billion-dollar business. It just is. Go look it up. You know, Christians have never been more prosperous than we're in America. I think the damning judgment, though, is what are we doing with it?
Yeah.
Are we doing that for cultural good, or did we just all kind of get really super comfortable and start, you know, if your faith starts involving treating other people really badly, which is where a lot of that cultural Christianity stuff starts going to, because now it becomes an in-group clique instead of a faith system.
Yeah, and then you start looking for crusades to fight, you know?
You look for crusades to fight, and then you get into things like people debating trans. It's like, okay, well, if you can quote me the suicide numbers, maybe you should tone down your rhetoric a little bit at the same time, because you just admitted to me you understand there's a problem here. Yeah. It gets into being tolerant of other faith groups.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm completely secure in my faith. My faith is secure here. You worship however you want to, and I'm going to make sure you have the ability to worship as you see fit, because I have that privilege, right? I know we've turned that into a bad word, but that's what it really ought to mean. It's like, oh no, we're secure, so absolutely nobody should ever bother a synagogue on a Friday night, Saturday morning. Nobody should ever bother a mosque in America at 10 a.m. on a Friday. Like, that absolutely should never happen in America that is secure in itself. But we're not secure in ourselves, so then people start treating others, whoever that other is going to be. Listen to Trump's rhetoric. It's always others. It's us and them, because that's the power dynamic. It's always, oh, it's us and them. Be secure enough in your faith that you start taking all those blessings you got and make sure everybody else gets as many of them as they can possibly get. And you know what that does? That makes your faith attractive to other people.
Yeah.
That makes people want to know about your faith. That makes people want to know, well, they got something that's different than everybody else does. That you really want to grow your faith, that's how you do it. That's not the fast, sexy, splashy, trending way to do it. That's the way to actually, oh, those are good people. I want to hang out with good people.
Yeah. How do you treat your neighbors? How do you treat your neighbors, for God's sakes?
like when I'm, you know, selecting a church to go to, it's like, do I want these people around my kids?
Yeah.
Do I want to hang out with these people? It's not, oh, how good's the music? Because everybody's got good music. Because one of these days, you and me need to do a project on how when musicians figured out they could make a living in churches, that changed both churches and music forever. Yeah, but we'll talk about that some other time.
Because
that absolutely happened.
I could do 6 hours on that, but
that absolutely happened, and we need to talk about it. But like, it's not the music, it's not the presentation, it's not all the cool programs. Are these good people?
Yeah.
And people that just show up for the show and leave, that's not exactly what I'm looking for in a church. Sorry, I'm not. And those are the things you start thinking about, is like, do you have a... I don't see evidence of faith. Don't be judgy. That's not what that word means. Christ talked a lot about fruit inspecting.
Yeah.
You know, inspect the fruit. Is the fruit good or not? Are the people good or not? Are they good people? I can hash out the doctrine stuff later.
Yeah.
Are you good people doing good things to make a better world? That's where your line needs to be.
And we'll end here in just a second. I know I got to let you go, man. But I just, you know, on this podcast and in my writing and everything else, you know, I always try to get it right, obviously, politically. I try to not put out bullshit or lie to the audience or say something I don't believe or just say something that, you know, I do a lot of research. I read a ton. It takes up a lot of time, you know, that I could be doing other things and getting paid more money, you know. But, like, I try to get it right. I really try to look at, and that's why, you know, I offend the audience, because sometimes I don't say the things that all libertarians agree with or all right-wingers agree with or whatever. Like, I come to my own conclusion. I really try to get it right. But the gravity, and I get stuff in terms of faith wrong too, but the care I at least try to take in terms of getting it right when it comes to scripture is infinitely more. You know, like, if I fuck something up on this podcast politically, I just get on the next podcast, be like, oh, sorry, my bad, guys. Like, I got that one wrong. Turns out that wasn't right. You know, maybe I got this policy wrong. Oops. You know, like, whatever. I told you to vote for this guy. Turned out to be a bad guy. Oh, sorry, my bad. But, like, I try so hard. Like, it's so much harder on me and worse if I get something wrong, if I, like, misquote scripture or say something in regards to my faith that turns out not to be true. Like, that tears me up. And the fact that people are just as flippant with, and they shouldn't be flippant about politics either. Do your research, read a freaking book before you get on a mic or get on Twitter anyway. But, like, the fact that people are just as flippant about their faith as they are about politics, when one is infinitely more important than the other, that it's like, I'm not, it's a big word and I don't want to throw it around lightly. I'm not saying it's blasphemous for Trump to be selling these Bibles or this, that, and the other. I'm not saying that. I'm not God. That's above my pay grade. But it's like, man, if you say you believe in God, you should take this stuff a lot more serious than you do. It's just like, it's categorically different to screw this up than it is to screw up. You go on some media hit, I do some hit and I screw something up about whatever. Whatever political event is taking up the news cycle that day. If I mess that up, at the end of the day, who cares? Who cares? Like, it is what it is. I'm close to 600 episodes of this show. I've probably done another 300 episodes of other people's shows. And I've written hundreds of articles and I've gotten a lot of stuff wrong. And that sucks, but it is what it is. I don't want to get my faith wrong. I don't want to get the word of God wrong. And I take that very seriously. I still fail, obviously. But I take it seriously. And just to see that our colleagues in this space who claim, if you don't claim to be a Christian, do whatever you want. Like, whatever. Like, it's whatever. But, like, if you claim to share my faith and you're just as flippant about that as you are about everything else, it's like your priorities are way out of line. You're in a place where you should not be, and you've made some wrong decisions on the road to get there.
Yeah. I mean, we could spend a month on eschatology. That's another one of those big words. Like, here's your thing. Do you really, in our Christian faith, I understand people without other faiths will listen to this, so I need to explain it so they understand what you and me are talking about.
Right.
In the Christian faith, at least the backgrounds that we come from, if you really believe, and there's debate amongst Christians, there's debate amongst even same denominations on this, how this actually works, but vaguely speaking, if you really believe, you're going to stand and be judged by your God when this thing's done. And everybody's going to be done. Nobody's getting out of here alive, right? If you really believe that, is there some evidence in how you treat your faith? And, like, I 100% believe that when I die, I am going to stand before my God and my works are going to be judged and there's going to be a whole lot of ugly involved. Now, I also don't want to get into all the salvation stuff, but I also understand that judgment's a little different because I'm covered under salvation. So it's a judgment of my works, not of, you know, death and hell and all that, because that's already been covered.
Yep.
But however form that takes and how you interpret it, if you really believe you're going to be judged when this thing's done and it's all going to get laid out and you got to answer for it, that should affect how you behave yourself.
Yeah.
And when I look at things like the Trump Bible stuff, that's somebody who doesn't respect it at all because they wouldn't do it. Not because it's blasphemous, not because you shouldn't write in a Bible or not because you shouldn't put a pledge. If you respected it, you just wouldn't even think to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It would. Yep. You're, that's where that thing where, like, speaking the language, the religion thing always irks me when he does that.
Yeah.
He didn't bother to respect it enough to even get the language right. He never bothered to just stop and actually learn it because everybody just flock. Trump is a creature. We've got enough book on him. He adapts to learned behavior. And he has learned that a large portion of his Christian base will seal clap to whatever he does. So he never bothered. Remember all those people were like, well, we're going to learn. We're going to teach him up. He's going to learn this stuff. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Because you gave him everything he wanted right off the bat. He never bothered having to. A lot of politicians know the nomenclature and the phraseology a lot better than Trump does, because they're like, okay, if I want these people to vote for me, I better go to church once in a while, and I need to learn the nomenclature, and I need to learn the buzzwords, and I need to make the karaoke sound good.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. I need to at least not, you know, I can't get all the high notes, but I'll get the rhythm right.
Yeah.
Trump never bothered doing that because everybody just gave him what he wanted, and he's never had to learn that, which tells me two things, and I'll stop with this. It tells me he never respected to do it, and it told me they never respected them enough to make him do it.
Yeah.
That's the truth, because mm-hmm. I've got 8 years of book on it now. You cannot refute those two things. He doesn't respect them, and they don't respect themselves enough to make him respect them. You have to make people respect you in this world.
Yeah.
And the Christians that have supported Trump never made him respect them, so he does not respect them. That's just the cold, hard truth. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. Going to make a lot of friends and influence people with this episode, my brother.
I mean, I've got all kinds of doctrinal studies that I can give you the big words for it, but that's what it boils down to.
No, you're right.
I respect my faith way too much to ever put in my social media profile that what my faith is. Because, you know, I'll go off on a tangent, lose my bearing for a minute. I don't want that reflecting on my faith. I always worry about these people that put all that, like, why do you need to put all that in your profile? I know it's judgy. All right, judge me for it. Judge me back. It's fine. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Like, why do I want to open with that? I'm a flawed person, man. I don't want to make the whole faith feel bad because I got, you know, upset at Lee Greenwood.
It's like the guy, the guy putting the bumper sticker on his truck. It's like, man, is there a worse idea in the world than that?
Oh, I have like, a whole, I hate bumper stickers. I don't like license plate holder.
It's just not a good idea.
Like, I don't want anybody driving past me to know anything about me.
No. I don't need, no, man. I don't think it's going to reflect well on anybody. So I leave my truck clean, man.
I don't need to make a big doctrinal statement with my Honda Civic. I'm just saying, I don't. But no, the point is, if you take your faith seriously, and I try to take it seriously as a very flawed person who doesn't want to be a role model for anybody's faith because I know my flaws intimately well. If you take your faith seriously, the one thing a complete outsider should be able to look at you and say is, okay, he's at least trying. He takes it seriously. It's that we were talking about CCM. So it's just one of those great quotes, you know, the Carmen quote in the DC talk. So I was like, that's what an unbelieving world finds unbelievable. Yeah. People that confess it, but you can't find anything in their lives whatsoever about it. Yeah. That's what they find unbelievable. And when you start, and then when you put politics on top of it, they not only don't believe it, they are appalled by it because you just turn into walking hypocrisy.
Yeah.
So find a mirror. Every gas station bathroom has one if you don't have one at home. Find a mirror, start there instead of some viral tweet, and then see if we can maybe do a little better job on some of this stuff.
It's funny, man. Like the new slogan of the right is America first, you know. And they don't mean it this way, you know. They mean like, you know, no foreign aid, or like, you know, bring the steel workers back to America and all that. They mean like, you know, protectionism and like, you know, not giving money to other countries or whatever. It's just something to be said for that. But it's like, you know, you see they include America first in every single one of their tweets. And like, I always chuckle because I'm like, I love America, but I'm like America fifth. Or
first means one. There's only one thing on the point of that. You ever see an overhead shot of the pyramids? Like it's only like a foot and a half up there. There's not a lot of room up there. It's one thing at the top of the pyramid.
It's not America. I love America, but it ain't America.
Look, the country's way up there. I've done a lot of things for my country.
You have a lot more skin in the game than I do, brother.
It's up there, but no, your America should not come first. My face ahead of that. My family's ahead of that. Yeah. Now it's all interwoven. I understand that.
Sure.
It all overlaps.
Of course.
If the political movement of America first is dominant in your life, your whole life's out of order. Yeah. Sorry, it just is.
And it's just you're never going to see, even if you accomplish your political will, it's not going to look the way you want because it's not, when you are out of order.
It's not attainable.
It's not attainable. But it's also, if you have your entire worldview backwards, it's like fruit of the poisonous tree anyway. Like, it's just not going to end up the way you expected.
There's no version of that where it's not you-centered. And anytime you're you-centered, it's always going to end up the same way with you in a mess.
100%. Andrew, my brother, where can everybody read your stuff? Check out your show, which I highly recommend, all the good stuff.
Herdtell.substack.com, which was so fun because you and me spent a full day trying to get a link that would work to my own Substack to you because we're that bad at, you know, the high tech stuff. But Herdtell Substack, that's one-stop shopping, ordinary-times.com, do a lot of commentary there. I haven't been doing shows. I've had a lot going on. My dad had a stroke this year, and I've been on the road, and I got family stuff going on. But we're going to get back to doing Herdtell shows. But it's archived up, man. There's 600-some episodes back there, lots of good stuff to look in there. For the Fire on the Twitter. I should have thought about having to explain that in the audio format before I picked that handle, but there it is. By the way, that's a Bible story. Everybody asked me where that comes from. I was like, go look it up. That's a Bible reference too. forforthefire@gmail.com. Always enjoyed talking to you, buddy. Always enjoy the time. And we need to get you down to West Virginia for some fishing and some of that fun stuff that doesn't involve politics, my brother.
Oh, absolutely, man. We'll make it happen. Everybody check out Herdtell. Everybody follow Andrew. He's great. That's all I got for today. I'm Brady Leonard. I'll be back on Monday. No gimmicks.